Lecture number three.
Last time we were together, we started discussing
the properties of the function we could make when a random variable was constrained to have values less than or equal to some particular quantity x, and we call that mu of x. We saw that was a non-decreasing function. So it could go up, it could go flat for a while, go up again, flat, up, and then when it reached 1, which we had normalized it, that was the end of it. And the first example we talked about were mu absolutely continuous. They happen to be given by the integral of non-negative functions, which when I said x going to plus infinity, that integral would be unity, which was one of the conditions of normalization. This was a continuous function, and it had the property that its derivative was equal to rho. So this was the integral of its derivative. I emphasize that because the next example was not like that. That was a mu discrete, which was based on the Heaviside function, which was 1 if x is greater than or equal to 0, and 0 if x is less than 0. So that had the property that it rose up to unity at one step. Discontinuous function. Today we want to take up the third kind, which is called singular continuous. SC will be our abbreviation. This was not known for many years. It was an astounding discovery. Set mathematics on its ear. This is based on the so-called Cantor function, or at least that's the easy way into the story. And I'll call that with a C bar of X. The bar does not mean complex conjugate, it's just to dress up the C, because we need the C for something else. So we have to define the Cantor function. Cantor function is defined on the unit square. So in our previous pictures of x, we're going to have everything happen between 0 and 1. So this function is going to rise, start here, and end here. We divide this into thirds. So that's 1/3 and 2/3. And at this level here, which is the half level, we put a horizontal line. Then we go to this interval and divide that into thirds, go to half of that interval then, which is 1/4, and put another horizontal line, and likewise up here. And we continue that process over and over, taking the middle third of each of the segments left, and so on. That gives us a function which does that, approximately, hard to draw. C bar of x has all the requisite properties that we put down for our measure. It is indeed equal to the integral of its differential. That's the definition of integration, if you like, but it is not equal to the integral of its derivative. Because this function is almost everywhere constant. Here it's constant. Here it's constant. It only changes at rational values, at the 1/3 and the 2/3 and things like that. So changes at rational. So the derivative, if you like, is 0 almost everywhere. And therefore, this function is not equal to the integral of 0. Therefore, it's not equal to the integral of its derivative. So like this function is also not equal to its derivative. This one has the property that it too is minus infinity up to x p of h y, and I cannot multiply and divide by 2.
Believe it or not, this is a continuous function. To go up there.
Can you convince us of that?
I've tried the following way. Let's map the point x into its value c of x. So I'm going to pick a particular point here. X, that's its c of x. So I'm going to give you the table of how the function is made. X is convenient to define in tertiary number system. You've heard of binary and decimal. We're going to do it in powers of 3. So I'm going to give you t1, t2, t3, where the number in question then is t1 over 3 plus t2 over 3 squared, t3 over 3 cubed. So that's in base 3. The answer, I'm going to give it to you in base 2, because this is halves, quarters, and things like that. So that's b1, b2, b3, and therefore that number is b1 over 2 plus b2 over 2 squared plus b3 over 2 cubed, etc. And so I give you now the map that fills in every one of these points. It's easiest to do it by example. So let's take the following example. Remember that tertiaries have components 0, 1, and 2, just like binaries are only 0 and 1. So here is a number. In tertiary form. That's some particular point down here, the x-axis. Now I map it into a binary number, which will be its image under the function. 2's map to 1's, 0's map to 0, 2's map to 1's, 2's map to 1's, 0 maps to 0. The first 1 I encounter maps to a 1 also, and then everything else after that maps to a 0. So the first 1 I encounter goes to a unity, and then automatically everything else is a 0. Let's take an example. Let's take 3 here. That's our original point. That's equal to 1/3. That's our starting point right here where we went up to 1/2. So that map, 1, maps into a 1 here, and everything after that is 0. So that's 1/2. That's exactly right. Now let's go a little further. Let's put a 1 here. So this is a little bit more than a third. That's a third plus a ninth. That's this a little point down here, say. But that's supposed to go to a half also. And according to the rule, the first 1 you encounter is 1, then everything else is 0. So that has gone to a half. That's also gone to 0. Even if that was a 2, it would still go to 0. So that illustrates the point. Now, talk about continuity. Continuity is what happens way out here. Things are going to be certainly continuous if that is horizontal. And suddenly out here, I encounter my first 1. That makes a big difference down here, and then everything else is 0, and that's where I test the continuity. But since I'm in such small powers of things, it's clear that the function is continuous. I only became aware this last semester when I taught this same function for a different course that this is the shortest distance between this corner and this corner by a continuous function. That's not square root of 2 in length, because I've only put horizontal lines down. The sum of those horizontal lines is unity. So we had gone from this point to this point by a continuous function. Okay,
not differentiable like you would think it would be. It's a continuous function, and it's shorter than square root of 2. I think you're entitled to try that on your friends and get a beer. Okay, so that's the Cantor function. And that's one example of this singular continuous function. It's continuous, that's why it falls in the same family as this guy, the original guy, because he too was continuous. This guy is, however, the integral of its derivative, the other one is not. Now, you can make more complicated mu sc, so our mu sc would be our standard example here, would just be the Cantor function itself. But the Cantor function does not have to start at zero. It could start at other places. We could put in coefficients, p sub l, sum on those. That would make another example of a singular continuous situation where the pl is positive and the sum of the pl was unity. That would be a family then of possible singular continuous functions. And finally, we make the remark that most general probability distribution, other words, probability measure, is of the form combination of absolutely continuous, discrete, plus singular continuous, with coefficients A, B, and C, where they can be non-negative, and their sum adds up to 1.
If you can find a fourth one, your fortune is made. All right. Let's turn our attention to support properties. Support properties, okay.
This is a qualitative way to compare measures. Suppose we have an example on the real line A and B, and our measure lives on this set. Measure lives on interval A to B. Let's call that mu AB, just to give it a name. And here's another example over here, CD, where another measure lives. Mu CD.
Question.
Hello? Question.
If you have a function which is like...
Are we talking about this?
Yeah, about
part
that.
Of this platform?
Yeah, if you have a function which is discontinuous at 5 points from 0 to 1, would you consider that as a discrete continuous function or singular continuous function?
So if C of x, no, sorry, if mu of x, like that?
Yeah.
If it's absolutely flat in the middle,
yeah,
then it would be a case of pure summation of these kind. Remember, we had our more general mu d was not merely the h of x, but we let the place take and the strength of it also vary. So that's exactly this kind of problem. However, this could be smooth and rising in here. Then this would be a portion where there was continuous measure present.
Because the difference between mu d and mu s is just that there are countably many singular points. There are countably many discontinuity points.
That's a difference, yes, but I can certainly have something that's countably discontinuous, but not a continuous function. Every half unit or every integer, it went down one, then up one, then down one, then down one. That's countably discontinuous, but certainly not a continuous function.
Okay. So I'm just giving you an intuitive idea of where this thing is located. That's what I really mean. If I did an integral of this function between plus and minus infinity against anybody here, all it really cared about was what it was doing between A and B. That's another way of saying that the measure lives between A and B. What's outside cuts no ice. Okay. So we want to give some kind of relation to these two. They live on distinctly different sets. We call that mutually singular. So these two measures are mutually singular. Why don't we do an example? Mu 1 of x is delta of x dx. I'm just using the equivalent notation that you would use for Heaviside, but I'm doing it in something probably even more familiar to you. And d mu 2 of x is delta of x minus 1. So I claim these guys are mutually singular. This one lives on the set x equals 0. This one lives on the set x equals 1. So this guy, these two guys are mutually singular. Besides this kind of example of smooth functions here. Suppose we have A, B, and C, D, and they overlap. A equals C, B equals D. So they have identical sets. In particular, then, D mu A, B can be written proportional to d mu c d of x with a proportionality factor, rho of x. And more to the point, there is a proportionality factor that goes the other way too, rho of x inverse. Now, this may seem trivial to you, but I'll give you the third example. I give you only one of these works and not the other. And this is what's called, we say mu AB in this case is like that to mu CD, and these guys are equivalent measures. They live on the same sets. Another way of saying it, they have the same sets of measure zero. Third way these two little boxes can nestle with respect to each other, A, B, and C, D. So this one is wholly contained within the other one. D mu A, B is related to D mu C, D. Come on. By means of a function, rho of x, which is basically zero in certain locations, namely between A and C and B and D. But I cannot find any relation which goes the other way around. I cannot, from this interval, decide how this guy outside is distributed. So that doesn't exist. This is only a one-way situation. And we say mu AB has double angles here with respect to mu CD.
I forget the name of this. If anybody remembers this one, let me know. Right now we're just going to tell, just going to say that this one dominates that. You got a good name?
Absolutely continuous.
Which one?
Absolutely continuous.
Absolutely continuous?
Yes.
Okay. So Mr. P. Chen has recommended absolutely continuous. Maybe so. Anonymous is proposing dominant. But this one dominates over that one. I don't know.
I forget the name. We'll find it out somehow. I'll let you know. Okay, support. Support becomes far more interesting in functional integration when we deal with infinitely many variables
and rather unexpected behavior.
Okay, that brings us to the next chapter, subchapter.
Section 2.3, characteristic function. Yes.
What happens if there is partially overlapped one?
So what would you have in mind? Like this?
Piece of AB sits in a piece of CD.
Okay, so this is AB and this is CD like that, so there's partial overlap?
Would that just be the sum of the first and the third case?
I hope so. Let me look. First. Yeah, I would think so.
Okay. For any probability distribution, I mean any combination, for example, of this kind or the pure separate kinds that we focused on, we will take the Fourier transform of that and define that as C of t. It's called the characteristic function associated with the probability distribution. Some properties of this are evident. C of 0 equals 1 just by integration. 2. C of t is less than or equal to 1. That's just by put absolute values here. I should say absolute value. Absolute values and absolute values going inside. Make that. So let's do that once over here to make sure. Down to be one. Third one, a little bit less obvious, but not so far away. Alpha J star, alpha K, J and K equal 1 to capital N, let us say. C of TJ minus TK is greater than or equal to 0 for all finite sums, where the alphas are obviously complex numbers. And the fourth property, that it has this continuity, so it's a continuous function. Fourth property is so important, I'm going to spend a few minutes showing you how that's established. So C of t minus C of s, absolute value. It's equal to absolute value of u to the I t x minus u to the I s x d mu of x, less than or equal to the absolute value inside. And then break that into three intervals, minus infinity to minus a, plus minus a to b, plus b to plus infinity, the next step is to pay the price. These numbers are going to be large. B is going to be large. So we'll get a small part of the weight here, so we don't care. We'll make an approximation. This number cannot be bigger than 2. For example, if T and S were both 0 and I changed the sign to a plus, then that's 1 plus 1. That's the biggest it could be. So that's a 2. For this one, 2. And it's minus infinity to minus A, plus b to plus infinity d mu x. Plus what's left over, minus a to b. Now I'm going to use e to the I t minus s x minus 1. All I've done is multiply that, get rid of that phase situation, d mu of x. Now, since d mu of x plus minus infinity is 1, I can always arrange b to infinity, d mu of x, to be less than epsilon over 4, say. Choose the b. Give me an epsilon. Then I will find the b, which does that. Likewise, I can have, make it 8. D mu of x less than epsilon over 8 as well. Choose the A sufficiently negative so that I catch all that, epsilon over 8. The sum of these two is epsilon over 4 multiplied by 2. That's epsilon over 2. So I've just made that side epsilon over 2 by a proper choice of A and B. Now A and B are fixed, absolutely fixed. Then I use the property that e to the I t minus s x minus 1 equal to the integral 0 to t minus s x e to the I u du. I bring the inequality inside and kill this factor. So that's t minus s. So I can replace that by minus a, b, 2, t minus s, x in magnitude, d mu of x. Y2, no 2. Okay. So, let's polish it off over here. So we have a t minus s outside, and we have a minus a, b, d, no, we have an x, d mu of x. I'll write that from 0 to b, plus minus a to 0. T minus s. This thing I can maximize by making the x the biggest it can be, so that's b. And the weight of that, I can make that all the way from plus to minus infinity. That's very generous. So that could be 1. this, the maximum it could be is A. I give that all the weight at once. So that's A. So all I have to do is make this combination, choose my T minus S close enough so that this thing is less than epsilon over 2. Therefore, T minus S is less than epsilon over 2 max A plus modulus of A and modulus of B. And then I have established that that whole sum is less than epsilon.
I can make epsilon as small as I like. And therefore, we have continuity. Absolutely a very important property. Okay. So we have these four critical properties. Make sure I marry this with the other three here. That doesn't improve, we don't need that.
Can the Cantor functions that we talked about, they satisfy this criteria for a continuous function?
Well, that would be C of T is the Fourier transform of the Cantor measure. That's why I put the bar on the C. I don't want you to confuse Cantor with characteristic function. If we were talking characteristic function today, I would have given Cantor the whole C. That help your question? Okay. By the way, you were not here the first day, correct?
Yeah, I got the notes from Ava.
But you didn't get a syllabus. Anybody else? Didn't get a syllabus? Okay. So Bochner's theorem. We won't prove, just state. Any function C of T, T on the real line that satisfies 1 through 4 is necessarily the Fourier transform measure, i.e. that C of T is indeed equal to, in other words, that's what we've been calling a probability measure. So in a way, everything about the measure can be studied by studying the C of T, one-to-one, uniqueness. And it's often a lot more convenient to do that. In particular, we can talk about convergence. For example, suppose we have a sequence of characteristic functions. Since they are characteristic functions, they all are associated with certain measures. N equals 1, 2, 3. Suppose Cn of t converges pointwise to C of t. And C of t satisfies 1 through 4. Then C of T has this representation, and we can say that the measures themselves have, in a way, converged to this measure. That has a name that they're supposed to equal something. That's called the weak limit or measure. Fact that their characteristic functions converge. Let's do two quick examples. G
John, did you say, or is it required, the CN of T satisfy points 1 through 4?
Of course, because they are characteristic functions.
They are by definition.
Right.
Well, okay, if the CNs fulfill this thing, then these are probability measures, they will automatically have all those properties.
Okay, so here's some examples.
Let's take e to the minus b over 2. No, we like the n, n over 2 x squared dx square root. N over 2 pi to be our measures. So these are Gaussian. We know that just from prior knowledge. We'll talk about Gaussians a lot. And they are of the absolutely continuous kind, because here is a nice row of x. So what is their characteristic function? So what is the Fourier transform of that? I tell you it is e to the minus t squared over 2n. Now we ask ourselves, what happens as n goes to infinity? C of t limit n goes to infinity, that equals the number 1. 1 is a function which satisfies these four properties. It's surely continuous. All these things are true, and it's pretty straightforward if you want to play that game to satisfy that. So this satisfies Bochner's theorem. So this is the Fourier transform of a measure, and that measure is the Helmholtz function, which says everything lives on x equals 0. At x equals 0, there's no t dependence. So this is a discrete fellow. So here we have a sequence of absolutely continuous going to discrete. And we don't have the problem that we had the other day about saying delta of y dy integral minus infinity to 0 should have been 1. Remember that story we had the other day? Well, that doesn't occur when you take the limits through the characteristic functions. That number is simply 1. Doesn't arise. Okay, here's another example. So all I'm doing is putting n to become inverse n. The cn's of t now become e to the minus n t squared over 2. The n is on top. Limit cn t as n goes to infinity is what? A function we'll call d of t, defined how? If t equals 0, that's defined as 1. If t is different from 0, that's 0. So this function, this limit fellow, did not conform to the four conditions. It did not specially conform to continuity. Not a continuous function. So d of t does not correspond to a measure. Can also tell when the measures don't converge, at least in this sense, to something, or when they do converge.
So if the measure, if the CNs converge to a characteristic function, then are we going to be sure that the measure coming out of it is going to be one of the three kinds?
Yes, because there are no other kinds. I assure you, your PhD will be awarded tomorrow if you find a fourth kind.
I'm in the mathematics department. I will make sure that happens.
People didn't think there were three kinds for a long time. They thought there were two until Mr. Cantor came along and said, so it is conceivable, okay, that there could be a fourth kind. What?
So when was this?
Oh, early part of the 1900s, I believe.
But even if there is another type of measure, the only types of measures that you should get out of that are the
convex combination of those three. It could be a mixture of those three. All right. Let's talk about. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Very good. An application of characteristic functions. Well, okay, I've done it. First, I want to give you a definition here. So e to the itx, x is the random variable, in this average sense, that is then another notation for this expression. This is the x value that this capital X can take on. This is the infinitesimal probability that it will have that little x value. You superimpose that over all the disjoint probabilities, and that is then the characteristic function. This is the generator of moments, clearly. All I have to do is expand in a power series. Now, in point of fact, I am now interchanging a sum and an average. That may not be allowed. We've talked about interchanges before. That's a question of whether these moments exist or not. We'll assume they all do. And so this, by expanding in powers of t, you pick up the moments of the distribution. There's another generating function of interest. Call that little c. A little c of t is called the second characteristic function. Make a power series expansion of C as well, or we symbolize it as such. I'll show you that in a minute. As follows, e to the I, by the way, at t equal to 0, since this is unity, then this C of t, C of 0 has got to be 0. So this is a definition. This is the generator of ordinary moments. This is the generator of connected moments. C standing for connect. Has other names as well. And you can make a nice power series expansion on Maple or Mathematica or something for this power series and this power series to relate the two together. I will do two terms for you. X and X C.
C are connected. Let me go the other way around. X squared connected is equal to the second moment minus the square of the first moment.
Things of that kind.
This is a very important combination. Of course, this is called the mean, and this is called the variance. Tells you how much this quantity differs from its average value, or approximation to that. Okay, so...
Don't you want the second square on the outside
of
the angle?
Yeah, sorry, thank you. Well, just to complete the story, this thing is then the generator of the connected moments. And this series begins with 1 to infinity. Okay. Now, application to Gaussian distribution.
I have a question.
Sure.
By connected, you mean that every higher moment will have terms of the lower moment inside of it?
He raises the question, does connected mean every...
What does connected mean?
Connected means the new part in the moment that is not contained in the lower order moments. X cubed connected, if I remember correctly, is X3 minus
2.
I think 2. 3 X squared plus 3 or 2 X quantity cubed. Something like that. So if this thing is 0, then that tells you this guy is completely determined in terms of those guys. We will also find that if I have 2 random variables, so x and y are random, and s and t are their parameters for the characteristic function. If this breaks into 2 expressions, the product, and that means that x is independent of y, 2 independent random variables. Now, what does that mean for the connected functions? That means the connected functions are given by the sum of the connected functions of the individual ones. These guys add completely, separately, and independently to those. So that's a very convenient way to put independent variables together. You simply add their connected functions. Okay, so I have one last sentence. Most general Gaussian distribution has the following property. There is a first moment up here, possible, and a second connected moment, and that's all. So X M C is identically 0, M greater than or equal to 3. That's the defining property of
one defining, one way to look at it, a defining property of a Gaussian distribution, and it's quite easily stated in this relation involving characteristic functions.
Okay. Class dismissed.